this?
I didn't.
I sent it. You're right. It never came through. Okay, everybody. Go. Here we go. Let's go. Okay. Hello, everybody. This is Erev Hanukkah. Okay. Today we are going to do something about Al Hanisim. Okay. We're not really doing the parsha. We're going to do Al Hanisim. Okay. So first of all, open Yisodurim Tal Hanisim. And what we're going to do is we're going to analyze this tefillah. We're going to break it into its various parts. We're going to see the questions that are evident, self-evident, from just, you know, looking at the structure of Al Hanisim. And from that technical, structural, you know, form of Al Hanisim, we begin to develop a more philosophical, fundamental concept, and that's going to lead us into a discussion of the real machlokus between the Greeks and the Jews, the crux of the matter. Okay? Not that the Greeks were into beauty and were not hedonistic, but where that all came from, much deeper than that, okay, much more basic. So the first thing we are going to start with, so that everybody comes to be aware of the, of what is trying to be conveyed in Al Hanisim, we have to look at the structure. And there's some basic questions that arise. So, first of all, look at Al Hanisim. And we are going to be looking for a tefillah that is celebrating the Nisim of Hanukkah. So, first off, what are the two major Nisim of Hanukkah?
The oil
and the war. Now, let's just think for a minute before we go into Al Hanisim. The war. What kind of an ace was that? What happened in the war? But what kind of an ace was that? Rabin Biyad Ma'atim. So, one second. Did our people go to war? Did they take casualties?
No.
Yes, many. Many casualties. This war went on for years. It was a 3-year war. This war was the Jewish people arranging into their little guerrilla troops, attacking on the sly, retreating. Of course they took casualties. We know we lost some of the Maccabees in it. Okay? This was a war that involved sacrifice. Did the Jewish people stand up to defend themselves? Absolutely. But was it a open miracle that they, like Pesach, where they stood in their houses and Hashem just slaughtered all their enemies for them? Of course not. So what type of nace do we call that? That would be considered like an nace nister, like Lahavdil, the Six-Day War. A nace nister, a hidden miracle. Like, let's say, the Six-Day War. We went to war, but the victory was astonishing. Okay. The other miracle of Purim is, of Hanukkah, is the oil, which we will speak about. Was that a nes nister or a nes galoy? That's a nes galoy, an open miracle. Something crazy happened. Now, did it happen publicly or privately? Privately. It was a nes nigla, an open miracle, that took place in a hidden private space, okay, where only one or two people saw it, but then it was exported to the entire nation to commemorate that miracle. That's why we have the 8 days of Hanukkah. That's why there's 8 days. That's about the nace of the Shemen. Okay. Now, so the battlefield nace was a nace nister. The Shemen was a nace nigla. Okay, quickly. What is the difference between a nace nister and a nace nigla? If you try to answer, okay, that the difference between a hidden miracle and an open miracle is one is through nature and one is not through nature, that is not true. And the proof is the biggest nes nigla of all, the biggest open miracle of all, which was Kriyas Yamsuf. Did that operate via nature?
Yes.
What? How?
The wind
blew all night. It was a form of a tidal wave, some type of tremendous wind that created, that pushed the water back and created a dry land. That's what we call a tidal wave. Okay, now. A form of a tsunami. It happened to happen at the right second when the Jewish people were there. But the point is, it went through nature. So that's not the distinction between them. The distinction between them is the result. The result of an ace nigla, in that it's so dramatic that it happens at the right time, precisely. Like when Moshe announced, I have to make two announcements, by the way. I'm so bad. When Moshe announced that, this one I'm going to do after, and this one we're saying that this is Eloi Nishmas Yosha Shalamis Basara, but don't leave before I make this other announcement. The one is the Nes Nister, okay? One would say it's more dramatic usage of Teva, less dramatic. That is true. To some degree, it's clearer in the Nes Nigla that Hashem is interfering in nature. And, for example, that's why Moshe would predict exactly what time the Nes would start, the Makkah would start, so that they knew this was a controlled system of God doing things as he willed, when he wanted to, he did it, and it happened. So it was clearly Hashem interfering in nature to make his will come about. Okay? So from that type of Nes, you can point to, there's a God who has Ratzon, will, and he does what he wants. Period. From a Nes Nister, it's not that clear that God is asserting his will, but what the result of a Nes Nister is, and always is, that it ensures the survival of Klal Yisrael. All the Nisim Nistarim through the ages have had a purpose, which is to ensure that Klal Yisrael survive, period. We can always count on all those type of Nisim to make sure we survive and we're protected. More or less, that's called the Nes Nister. But you can't point to it and show that proves God has a direct Ratzon this minute to interfere in history. It talks about Hashem's general Ratzon that Klal Yisrael survive. But a Nes Goloi is at this minute God is interfering to make his will come to bear. Whereas a Nes Nister, you know, if we think about it and the cumulative evidence of the survival of the Jewish people, it points to the conclusion that God must want the Jewish people to survive, or some force determines that the Jewish people survive, or somehow the Jewish people have had a very strange history and they are, you know, that breaks all the rules, but it's not as clear. So that's the first thing. Now let's look at Al HaNisim and see how is the Nes Nister of winning on the battlefield described, and how is the Nes Nigla of the Shemen described, okay? So Bimei Matis Yobin Yochanan Kohen Gadol Chashmonai, all right, Kisham Demachus Yobin HaRishal Am Chishol. Here goes the battlefield Nes, okay? Ata, you, Baracha Mecha Harabim, in your enormous compassion, Amadata Lehem Be'esarsam, you stood up for them in the time of their travail. Ravta Esrivam, you fought their battle. Danta Esdinam, you judged their case. Nakamta Esnikmasam, you took Nakama on their behalf. Masarta Giborim Biad Chalashim, you delivered the many into the hands, the strong into the hands of the weak. V'rabim biad ma'atim, and you delivered the many into the hands of the few. Okay? And then it goes on and says there's three more that are of a different nature here. Tameim biad tahorim, pure into impure, impure into pure, wicked into tzadikim, and zaydim, which we will describe what that means, into oskei torasecha, those who are busy with your Torah. So, first and foremost, what's wrong here? No, and that's coming next. That's coming next. What's wrong?
They had a fight for that.
It sounds as if this was Pesach. They sat in their houses, and you fought their battles, and you took the come on their enemies, and you judged their case, and you delivered their guy, the enemies into their hands. I mean, isn't that what it sounds like? It's specifically written as if the Jewish people did absolutely zero. There is no mention that we did anything. It's like Hashem did it for us. So the Nes Nister is talked about as if it's a Nes Nigla, as if it's an open miracle. Okay? Now, let's continue. Now we're going to speak about, obviously, the Nes Nister, the Nes Nigla of the Shemen. So it says, Va'achar kach, okay, and then it says, I'm sorry, V'lecha, and look what it says here. After it lists all the people that were delivered into the other peoples, U'lecha Asisa, Shem Gadol, V'kadosh Ba'olamecha, and you made yourself a great name in your world. You took care of business. And you did this whole thing. And you made yourself a name. Okay? Ula'amcha Yisrael Asisa Chua Gadol Uporkinimza. And for your people, you made a great salvation. Okay, so this entire miracle, which Klal Yisrael went up, got trained for war, you know, organized into little troops, fought a war, took casualties, suffered. It's as if Hashem did the entire thing, as if it's an open miracle, as if we're back in Mitzrayim and we're just sitting in our houses. Now, then, va'achar kein, and then after that all happened, ba'u banecha lidvir besecha. Now, who's the focus? Your children came to your house. Upinu eseichalecha, and they cleaned your sanctuary. V'tiyaru es mikdashecha, and they purified your mikdash. V'hidli kuneros, and they lit candles. V'chatos kodshecha, in your holy courtyards. V'kavu shmona simei Chanukah, and they established the 8 days of Chanukah. L'hodos l'halal l'shim chagadol, to give praise to your name. Who's the focus here? B'nai Yisrael. All the things we did. We came to the Beis HaMikdash and we painstakingly cleaned it, and then we were metahar it, we purified it, and then we went ahead and we restored it to its service, and then we went ahead and established a yuntiv, and all for the sake of giving praise to your great name. First of all, where is the Shemen mentioned here? Well, how do we know this is a reference that something even happened with the Shemen? Hidlikuneros. Because they lit candles for 8 days. So why would they do that? That is not related to the battlefield victory at all. Why light candles? So that's an allusion to the nes of the 8 days that involved the menorah, that they exported. It's the only temple service ever to be exported from the temple into every single Jewish home, that we all do what they used to do in the Beis HaMikdash. We don't do that with anything else. So this is clearly a reference to the second, to the nes of the Shemen. However, it's... Challah is a bracha. It's really, challah was you gave to the Kohen. It's a truma. It's one of the gifts to the Kohen, is taking challah. Not really related, so it was that. No, we do challah as a memory today of how we used to take that portion, and it was one of the gifts to the Lechem Mishnah's man, you know. There was a shulchan, but we don't have a shulchan in our house. We have a duplicate menorah. By the way, the reason you don't see golden menorahs for sale, and people can afford them, is it's too similar to the Beis HaMikdash, and you want to make sure that it is a distinction between our menorahs, also a different number of lights, obviously. But the point here is that we have to ask a question about Al HaNisim, really clearly. Everybody sees the question now, correct? Mm-hmm. That part which we did is attributed entirely to Hashem. That part which Hashem did makes no mention of Hashem at all and just gives a lot of praise and gratitude to the people and all the efforts they put into it. Both end in the same way. When Hashem fights their fight and does battle on their behalf without mentioning them at all, it says there, L'cha asis Hashem gadol ba'olmecha, you made yourself a great name. When we go through all the effort to make sure that Hashem's name is established in this world, we say, both nisim, the goal is l'shimcha hagadol. Your great name should be known, should be made, established, should be praised. That's clear. That's both sections end with that as the goal. L'cha asis Hashem gadol, you made yourself a great name in your world, and we establish Hanukkah to praise your great name in this world. So they both end the same. The question is, though, why is Al HaNisim written like this? Now, it's trying to say something, and that's our next point. First of all, we have a precedent here, okay, that when we put in a huge amount of ishtadlus, when we succeed in what we're trying to accomplish, we attribute the whole thing to Hashem. Which bracha on food does exactly that? Hamotzi lecha min ha'aretz. We make bread. There, you know the 39 melachos of Shabbos? The first, like, 11 are all about making bread. Okay, it's a whole category. Now, how many steps are there? There's 10, 11 steps in making bread. Some people eat their... This is a halacha, by the way. I mean, it's not a halacha. We're just mentioning what some people do, but we always talk about a halacha during the shir. Should be aware that some people, when they make the brachan hamotzi, hold it with 10 fingers to represent the stages. There's a different you know... kind of activities necessary in making bread, the 10 steps. And the word lechem is a shoresh of the word milchama. And everybody knows it's a battle. And there's many steps involved. And it's hard. And at any point it could be sabotage if Hashem doesn't cooperate with the weather or whatever. And then when we finally succeed in making our bread, which is what we need to live off of, how do we make the bracha? Hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz, as if loaves are just growing out of the ground. You bring bread out of the ground. It's not exactly the truth. Bread does not just pop out of the ground. So it's the same type of thing. We're doing the same thing. That's what we do. So why would we do such a thing? Okay? And why would it be that when we put in so much effort, we wrote Al HaNisim. When we wrote it, when we put in so much effort, we don't even take into account our effort. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu does a great thing, we just talk about how we reacted to it, how we responded to it, how we made sure that that nace became established and that we learned something from it. So obviously the answer to this is that if our agenda And the point of all our hishtablus is to make a great name for Hashem in this world, which is how it all started. When Avraham went Lech Lecha, he came to Eretz Yisrael, and the first act he did was he built a Mizbeach, Korei B'Shem Hashem. He called out in Hashem's name, which Ramban explains there, means he started teaching. He started making a name for Hashem in this world. Okay, all the others did it. That was their job. That was their agenda. If our tachlis, if our whole point is, if the reason we put so much effort into things, if the point of our effort is clearly for ourselves, not to make a great name for ourselves, that's the ego, which we always talk about, but to make a great name for Hashem, then when we succeed in making Hashem become obvious in this world, that's what we talk about. We're so thrilled that it's clear to the world that via us it became clear that Hashem supports the just ones and the right ones and overcomes their enemies and delivers their enemies into their hands and establishes truth in the world and makes sure that the people who are representing truth succeed. When we, through us, allow HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be known in those midas of emes and chesed in the world, then we're so happy and thrilled and satisfied and gratified with our efforts that the result is that it worked. Now look, now everybody knows that Hashem, supports Klal Yisrael, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivers the enemies in their hands, that Hashem, establishes what's right. And that's what we speak about. And then when HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us and does a nace for us, so we know he's behind, it's a pat on the back, he's by our side, and we'll speak more about the nature of this particular nace, then what do? Since our only real desire anyway is to increase the name of Hashem in this world, we use that as just encouragement, and we go further, 10 more steps, and we ensure that Hashem's name is built in this world. So either way you cut it, what we do, we attribute, our goal is, and we attribute it right back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that has a name. When we do something that is not for ourselves, not to make ourselves a name, but to establish Hashem's name in the world, what is that called? We're doing something, L'shem Shamayim, for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as opposed to for our own name, Nase Lanu Shem. As opposed to Nase Lanu Shem, let's make a name for ourselves, we are attempting to make a name for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's exactly what happened. That's how both halves of Al Hanisim end. L'cha Asis Hashem Gadol, and we were establishing 8 days of Hanukkah, L'hodos L'hala L'shimcha HaGadol. That's the goal. Now, that's the general idea. Built into Al Hanisim, in terms of the deliveries of these into those hands, there's two different categories, and we have to analyze them. And that will bring us to the next step, which is the bigger concept. That what was at the core of the Greek-Jewish debate. If you look back into Al Hanisim, in the section about our Hishtadlus, which is then attributed entirely to Hashem, because that's our goal anyway, there's two separate categories. What's the difference between Rabim Biyad Ma'atim and Giborim Biyad Chalashim and Tameim Biyad Tahorim, Rashayim Biyad Tzadikim, and Zaydim Biyad Oske Torasecha? Physical and spiritual. The first two, Rabim Biyad Ma'atim and Giborim Biyad Chalashim, can refer to both, but it definitely refers to the battlefield. It's the battlefield. That's what happened on the battlefield. There were more and they were stronger, and yet in the end they were not able to defend themselves, and the Nasal overcame them. That's battlefield, fighting. But there's another battlefield. Okay, and which battlefield is that, where the impure fall to the pure, and the Rashayim fall to the Tzadikim, and the Zaydim, who are they, fall to the Oskei Torasecha? That is not fought on the battlefield. That is the war of ideas, of polemics, of debates, of speeches, of trying to convince, of trying to grab who is going to secure the minds and the hearts of their people in their own camp. Whose ideology is going to win? That's the battle here. And in the end, the wicked fell to the righteous, and the impure fell to the pure, and the Zaydim fell to the Oskei Torasecha. So, there were two battles going on. There was, of course, the actual battlefield between the Greeks and the Jews. But so many Jewish people had Hellenized and had bought into the Greek culture and what it was all about and had a lifestyle. And that's what our leaders had to rise up against and fight. This is very similar to Rav Hirsch, Lahavdil, Rav Shamtrafal Hirsch, fighting the Reform movement It was a war of ideas. It was a debate for the hearts of the people, the minds of the people, either to abandon traditional Torah or to hold on to it and see that it works. And guess who won in both cases? We're all sitting here because of Rav Hirsch. Everybody who goes to, who's integrated in society and still a Torah Jew, is that's Rav Hirsch. Because that was in danger. The ones that were hanging on back then were the Hasidish Kehillahs, the Torah-only Kehillahs. That were not, they tried desperately to shield themselves from the Enlightenment. But the people that were integrated, like in Frankfurt, Germany, where he came from, the people that were integrated into society were falling away by the droves, just by every, they're losing them like a hemorrhage. And Rav Hirsch came in and taught them how they can be both, how they can, you know, work with the new opportunities and yet be Torah true. It's called Torah Derech Eretz. It was a very similar type of situation. And here, and our style of Judaism in America, which has a legitimate balance between true Torah and education and integration in society, is Rav Hirsch. He set up how to do it because no one else was figuring out a system that could work. It was like either or. Anyway, what we're going to do is analyze the most obscure of these three elements of the battle, and that is Zaydim Biyad Oskei Sorasecha. Who are Zaydim? And how are they different than Rishayim or Temeim? Okay, so in order to know who the Zaydim are, we look at, we'll flip back. We have a very similar phraseology because look in Al-Hanisim, before you flip the Siddur, it says, V'Zaydim biyad oskei torasecha, and immediately afterwards it says, U'lecha asis Hashem gadol v'kodesh b'olamecha. As soon as Hashem vanquished the Zaydim, that's when he made a great name for himself. Now, Before you go back, there is another tefillah that almost says the same thing in another context. It talks about Zaydim and Hashem making a great name for himself. Where is that? No. You have to be, those two have to be together. The concept of a Zaydim and making a great name for yourself. That doesn't talk about Hashem making a great name for himself right afterwards. Go back. Go to V'charos Imo Habris. Okay. She comes from Nehemiah. Right? You made a bris with Avraham to give him all these lands, and then you saw the affliction of our ancestors in Mitzrayim, and you heard their cry. And you made great miracles for Paro. Okay? In his land. Ki yadata ki hezidu aleihem, because you know that they were mazed. We're going to explain that. So what did you do? You punished them and did great nisim because they were mazed, and then v'taslach Hashem kahayom hazen, you made yourself a name. You see that pattern? Same thing. So what happened to the Mitzrayim? Who were the Mitzrayim that they were called hezidu aleihem? And because when Hashem overcame that, that's when he made himself a great name. Just like in Al Hanisim, Zaydim biyad oskei torasecha ulecha asis Hashem gadol. Who are these Zaydim? So my grandfather points this out in Yisro. Yisro says, regarding Mitzrayim and regarding Hashem, Ata Yadati, this is in Perek Yud Ches Pasuk Aleph, now I know how great Hashem is, Ki bedavar asher zadu aleihem, because in the way that Mitzrayim intended to hurt them, that's exactly how they were hurt. Now I see how great Hashem is, Shem Gadol, that in their very intentions, that's how Hashem undermined them. So what intentions did they have? So the pshat is they intended to drown the Jews, and they were drowned. But there's more here. Because the concept of mazid, being somebody called a zaydim, has a particular meaning. And the meaning in terms of Mitzrayim is, when Mitzrayim said, Hava nishak malo, let's deal wisely with them. When a person uses his intelligence, uses going further, his Torah knowledge, to distort and pollute and corrupt the truth for their own benefit, that person is officially called a Zayd, Zaydim. For example, okay, that is the type of evil that is through Chochmah. For example, in Parshas Shoftim, regarding a Zaken Mamre, a Zaken, an elder who's, again, you know, very also corrupted. V'ha'ish asher yaseh bezadon lebilti shama el hakohen. The person who willfully, who's intelligent and who is a leader and who is respected for their intelligence and for their learning goes ahead and doesn't listen to the Kohen, that's called Bezadim. Also, a Navi Sheker. A Navi Sheker speaking all kinds of oratory about God's will and truth and everything. Bezadon Davru Dibru Hanavi. In Zadon, this Navi spoke. And here's in Mishpatim. Ki Yazid Ish Areehu Lahargo Ba'arma. If a person concocts a plan, which takes a lot of thinking it out, every little detail, to kill someone secretly, through a trick, deceptively, right? This is, you know, some type of premeditated crime of murder that takes a lot of deception and a lot of cunning. That's also called Yazid. Here in Nehemiah, from where we just said, Ki Adata Ki Hezidu Aleihim. So my grandfather says, Anashim Ha'osim Masa Rasha Ba'arma. Al Yidei Chachma O Nevuah. Someone who does an act of wickedness, purposefully, deceitfully, by using their Chachma or their Nevuah, that person is called Zaydim. Those people are called Zaydim. So the classic example of those people would be come from Tehillim. Who in David HaMelech's life was known as a villain who used their enormous chachma of Torah itself to misguide, mislead, to undermine, and you know, and ultimately damage David HaMelech? Who was that? Not Shimi. Who is David's Rebbe who did him in? Achitofel. Remember, he called him his Rebbe because he learned from him. And Doeg. Doeg and Achitofel, it says about them, Karu li Zaydim Sichos. He says here, Zaydim halitzuni ad ma'od. He's referring to Doeg and Achitofel. And he had to refer, he said he learned. They were, Doeg was like the head of the Sanhedrin. So, when we talk about Zaydim, we're talking about people that are using their intense, extreme Torah knowledge to trip and to deceive, to ultimately for their own purposes, self-aggrandizement, versus the truth. Those are called Zaydim. Those people are very dangerous because they confuse the issues very much. And who are the ones who overcome them? Who are the ones that are not going to be swayed by their arguments? Who are not going to be paralyzed by what seems like the strength and validity of their position? Who will stay able to keep their eye on the ball and on the truth, no matter how, you know, impressive the other arguments are? Oske Torah Secha. Now, what does that mean? And that's the bracha we make every morning, Lasok V'Divrei Torah, that we should be among them. Oske Torah Secha means people that devote their energies to be involved with the Torah and what the Torah says, and that means not what they think. They try to be objective. They try to be humble. They try to take themselves out of the equation. They try to learn Torah lishma, again, l'shem shamayim, for Hashem's name and not for their name. The only antidote for somebody that has distorted everything because the ego and their own personal interest has gotten involved is a l'shem shamayim devotion, which we saw here in Al-Hanisim, to what's right, to Hashem's name, and when it's achieved, all the praise goes to our HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the whole point of it. We take nothing for ourselves. The only way we praise ourselves, like in the end of Al-Hanisim, is how much we do to increase Hashem's name in this world. That's the only praise we'll give ourselves. And especially if it works. If it works, we talked about this last week with Shimon and Levi. In the beginning, they had all the arguments in the world why they had a right to, you know, this was an act of war, and they had a right to come in and, you know, retaliate, and the victor takes all, and they were allowed to take from the booty, and why not? They vanquished the city, and it's all very legitimate. Only later, remember, when their cruelty that they displayed to Shechem all of a sudden was on display via Yosef, when everything went out of whack, for Dinah, you were Achim, and you were so, you know, committed to her, to defending her, and you had all this mercy and love for her, and everything was about Dina and protecting her. And so where did that go? Why, Yosef's also a brother. How come now it's just murder and cruelty? What happened? How did you become cruel people? And we said last week that it does not happen, that if a person does something l'shem shamayim, they become damaged spiritually because of it. That can't happen. So how did they get cruelty in their hearts, rooted in their hearts from killing Shechem? There's an answer. Wasn't l'shem shemayim, and that's how it got rooted in their hearts, and that's why it showed up with Yosef. And when Yaakov saw that, he cursed them, he punished them, and he gave them mussar, and he divided them up because he said, now you have to take a hard look at yourselves and see that you did not act l'shem shemayim. There was yourself, you know, your personal agenda involved, and we talked about the booty, and he gave them mussar. And who took the mussar? Levi. Who were the Hashmonaim? Leviim, Shevet Levi. They had perfected the midah of doing things l'shem shemayim because they took Yaakov's Musar, and right away they as a tribe they entered into a completely different position in Klal Yisrael. They were going to be the self abnegating tribe. The people that get nothing for themselves. They have no nachala, they have no parnasa, they wait for everybody else's gifts, they serve the people, they schlep everything in the Mishkan, then they set everything up, they do all the hard work, and then they don't even get to go in, and they don't get to wear big day kahuna. They are L'shem Shemayim. That's who they became. Mila Shem Elai, here, Hanukkah, Mila Shem Elai. They became the tribe of L'shem Shemayim. That's Al Hanisim, that's Bo Banecha, Lidvir Besecha. That's what they did. And the Zaydim are the people that are not L'shem Shemayim, and yet it looks like they are, because they are all dressed up like the biggest scholar and the biggest Talmid Chacham with all the most convincing arguments, and the only ones who can compete with that are people that are making sure to learn Lishma. And as soon as those people prevail, that simple truth, those people that do not have their own selves involved, then that's how Hashem makes a great name for himself. That's how Hashem's name is truly secure in this world. But now we go to the next point here, which is the bigger question. Okay? This is clearly the focus of Hanukkah, the Shem Shemayim, that the Ratzon is Hashem's Ratzon and not my Ratzon. As soon as my Ratzon comes into play, everything is distorted. This idea brings us to the essential conflict between the Greeks and the Jews, and it has to do with the word Ratzon. It all comes down to the word Ratzon. It's very, very important. Ratzon, will. Okay, how does this work? This works like this. The Greeks, okay, Arambam establishes this. Aristotle, he tells us what Aristotle's essential philosophy was, and Plato, okay? Aristotle's philosophy, the Greek philosophy, was that the universe always existed. Now, that is not an ancient Greek theory. Until the Big Bang theory, that was the ongoing theory. It was called the static state theory. It existed till recent times. It's called the static state theory. The universe had always existed. There was no such thing as a beginning. Plato, Rambam tells us, had a different version of that. He'd said no. There was always some type of primary matter, but it was not formed into the universe, and at a certain point, it became formed into the universe. We know, but there was always something before that. The reason they came to this conclusion is because there's a huge conundrum, which we all have to face, which is, if Hashem started the world at a certain point, because at that moment he had a ratzon, a will to start the world, then why then and not at another time? What does Hashem change? He just has a mood. Something seemed right to him at that time. Like, what does it mean to have a world that came into existence at a particular time, which seems to show that the God had a will, and if that God has a will, why didn't he do it before? Where, if the God has a will to do something, a ratzon to do something, why just now? Right? That is a big problem. Why just now? Why now does this ratzon show itself? So Aristotle established, and it's definitely the basis of modern science, that there, of course, is a set of principles and laws that govern this world. There's no question about it. First cause. There's a cause to this world. All the mathematical formula, all the rules, all that science knows, that is the explains the world as we see it. And it's knowable. Today we know much, much more than they knew. But they thought that all the rules in the world can be known, can be investigated, and they will know what's called the first cause, the cause of the world. But regarding the purpose of the world, that's Ratzon, they did not work with that. They did not speak of a purpose for creation. Their question precluded the concept of a purpose. If there's a purpose, why just now? Like, what happened? Just God woke up one day and decided that he needed a world? That makes no sense. And that is our problem too, by the way. We also don't really know that the answer to that question. So because they worked with the cause, but they denied purpose. They deny that the world has a purpose, that there is a ratzon of Hashem, and therefore Aristotle denied open miracles. Because an open miracle shows I am interfering right now to do things my way, to set the world up on a certain trajectory, to get to where I want it to go, and that's why I'm interfering in history. It's called a nes. He rejected nisim. They rejected purpose. They only had cause. Okay? Even Plato said there always was the basic elements of the universe, and then later the laws, you know, coalesced. Also does not get near purpose. Okay, cause and purpose. We know that there are 15,000 species of palm trees. Do we know why Hashem has to have 15,000 species of palm trees? If a person goes to a tailor and says, make me a pair of pants, and the tailor says, fine, come back in 3 days, and he comes back and he says, here's your pants, and they're 100 miles long. Okay, Hashem created a universe. As far as we know, he wants human beings on planet Earth to do his mitzvos. What does he need everything else for? As some great thinker once said in an argument between a believer and a skeptic, when the believer explained that this whole world is for humanity and free choice, etc., he says, sir, I fear that the drama is much too large for the stage, which is a very, very smart line. The point here is we don't understand the Ratzon Hashem either, so they discounted it. The Jewish position has been, and always will be, and it needed to be re-established at the time of Hanukkah, because the Greeks were the first people in history to discount the idea of a purposeful world. Prior to the Greeks, in all of the cultures in the ancient world, they did not discount that there was a God governing the world on a day-to-day basis, doing what he wanted. They believed it so much that they worshipped everything. They worshipped every stone, every tree, every river. I mean, they were not disconnected from Hashem. They were intimately connected. Everything was God. The lightning God was talking. The thunder God was speaking. Everything was God. God was imposing his will all the time. God had for sure, many gods. They all had their own rutzons. The whole concept of God and rutzon was deep. It was intuitive. The Greeks were the first people to disconnect the world and its principles, which they were happy to call God, from a purposeful God. Okay, there was a set of laws. There was a force. There was a there was a cause, they called it, but not purposeful, not with a ratzon that could be known or that had any bearing on anything. That's the difference. So there, at that juncture in history, it became crucial for the Jewish people to stand up and reaffirm, because don't forget, Hanukkah is the gateway to this era of Jewish history, till this very day. It became crucial for them to stand up and establish the difference in opinion. The Jewish people believe that the world has a purpose and a rutzo. Now, this makes a huge difference in how you look at life. By the way, just before we get there, Hanukkah as the gateway for this entire era of Jewish history, including the rest of the Second Temple and till today, when you walk into your house, here's another halacha, the mezuzah is on your right, correct? Because you're coming into your private domain, and your private domain is symbolized by the mezuzah. The mezuzah originated where? Where did we first hear about a mezuzah?
Egypt.
When they sat in their houses, put blood on the mezuzahs, and Hashem fought their battles. So the private domain, okay, the private domain, the domain in a person's heart, their home, is where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is obvious and evident to them, and that's what the mezuzah represents, okay? And don't forget, when they put the blood on their doorpost, it was a sign for themselves. The blood was on the inside. It was for them to know who they were and what they had just committed themselves to, okay? When the menorah goes on your left, which means that when you are walking into the world, the public domain, your menorah is on your right. So as you're entering, it's always the entrance, as you're entering the public domain, where they don't understand anything, where they're at odds with us, where they see the world a completely different way, that's the menorah. And the menorah establishes our fundamental different way of seeing the world, which is the ratzon of Hashem. Now, how does this affect our day-to-day life? Well, if God has no ratzon, if there is no purposeful creation that has a ratzon, that can therefore manage all the laws and make them work, you know, together to achieve that rut zone, then why in the world would anyone try to establish, or it would be patently false and futile, to try to establish that man has a rut zone that can override the natural laws that govern man? Man is also governed by law, natural law. We're hungry. We have basic temperaments and emotions that are on display all the time. We get angry. We kill. You know, we respond to laws that govern us. If we're hungry, we eat. If we're tired, we sleep. If we're angry, we could kill. If we're hot, we shed. If it's mating season, we mate. Like, we just, there are natural laws that govern man. Where does it come that you can argue that there's an overriding rut zone that can guide these forces and drive them in a certain direction? Once you eliminate that God has a will that he uses to manage all these forces in the world, once you dismiss that, then man doesn't have either. Why does man have a will? Where would man get such a will from to manage all their forces? So what comes into play is that the laws themselves are the ultimate. The natural laws are the ultimate. Natural law governs so that in the human being, the perfection of the natural, physical, biological elements of man make them perfect and strong and, you know, excellent. So physical beauty in all its ways. In every area of physical beauty, knowledge, as much as we can know of this world, and appreciation of it, and celebration of it, and perfection of it, it as an end in and of itself. Once you dismiss Ratzon, you've dismissed any purpose other than securing, the establishing of the perfection of the rules themselves, the beauty of the rules themselves. They are God. The nature is the God. Okay. What was the miracle of Hanukkah? The miracle of Hanukkah in the Pach HaShemen was a miracle, unlike any other miracle you really find in Tanakh, which was, oh, well, let me say one thing, I'm sorry. What proves that Hashem has a Ratzon? Proves that Hashem has a Ratzon is a concept that we have talked about here, that, and which is different than Aristotle and Plato. We do not say the world always existed. What do we say? Yesh me'ayin. There was a nothing. Now, we went down the road of that Hashem created that nothing, right? But there was an act of will where Hashem created the possibility of us coming into existence, right? That is called Yesh Me'ayin. Hashem really did have a Ratzon, like we say in Adon Olam, La'es Naso B'cheftzo Kol. At a certain point, Hashem made what he wanted. He did everything that was created was an expression of Hashem's will. We do believe in Yesh Me'ayin. The first two acts of Bria that are recorded in the Torah of creation is Bereshis, which Chazal say means Hashem set up time, the concept of time for us, that we function within a framework of time, which is what Aristotle had a problem with. If using time as a given, he said, well, if there's a God with a will, why now create the world and not before? But we say Hashem established time. And Aristotle's question comes from time. Okay, so first of all, Hashem established time. That was the first act, Bereshis. He made the concept of a sequence of time, beginning, in the beginning. He established the notion of a beginning, that we think of things in terms of beginning, and then the next step, and then the next step. That itself was a creation, which now physics is very well aware of. And the next thing Hashem said was, Yehi Ar, let there be light. And this light, we know, was the Ar Haganos, the spiritual light. So the first two elements are R. Now we know that R has other names. It's Eish, it's like fire is R, it's energy. That's what we call energy. Hashem created time and energy. Okay? Einstein came close to this. Energy E and MC squared, not that I know a lot of it, but he's working with time and he's working with energy and he's working with that in relationship to space. These are the factors, the preliminary factors. Now, time and R. R is, you could work to, the Rabbeinu Bahaya says about Havdalah, about Eish is the first creation. It's the source of all things. It's the energy. You call it R, fire, light, you know, nuclear fission, all the things that, the innate forces in the world that create light, heat, forms of fire, the sun, stars. All of this is what we call R or Eish. And that was that to us, we understand Torah to be, that's the act of Ratzon. That's where the Ratzon is first displayed. Okay, go to the Hanukkah miracle. Now, what day did Hashem say Yehi Ar? Chaf Hei Kislev. What's exactly 3 months later? Chanukah. Chaf Hei Elul. 3 months later, Chaf a kislev. The 25th word in the Torah, R. Okay? Chanu chafhe. They rested on chafhe, the 25th word in the Torah, R. Where did this miracle take place? In the Mikdash. What do we know by Hiba Yom Hashmini? What does famous Chazal tell us? When they established the Mishkan and they dedicated on the 8th day, what's the 8th day? At like the Bria. The Bria had 7 days for the physical world. And the Mishkan is like a little microcosm of the Bria. What is the Nes that takes place on Hanukkah? What two elements do we see again? Eish and time. The fire and time. In other words, this Nes is saying there is Ratzon, like there was at the Bria, to bring something into existence at that point. And here, this miracle is one that involves time and R. Same R. It's the same. It's a little bit of that R from the first day. The 25th word in the Torah is R, Vayhi R. So this is Hashem is establishing now, as history is taking a major turn in our heads. We are shifting, and this is what Jeremy Kagan speaks about in The Choice to Be, and he's coming here to speak. That's my all-time official current favorite book, The Choice to Be, and we were bringing him here. Amir Shem, he's going to give the share instead of me. He's a superstar. No, it's on the, isn't it next week, the 20th? No, the next week. You'll get an email. He is awesome. Now, the truth is I never heard him speak, but his book is amazing, and I hear he's a good speaker because I did ask around. But the point is, we're looking forward to that. But his book speaks about this. This is one of the main premises of his book. It really is excellent reading. Buy yourself it for Hanukkah. And he says how this was a shift in the mentality of humanity from a God awareness of God running the world to the point that it was dangerous, it turned into Avodah Zarah, to a dismissal of the notion of God running. And we took over as the ultimate judges and arbiters, and we determine the world became a result of how we see it, and they're not Hashem at all in terms of Hashem's will. So we said that the Nes of Hanukkah is a parallel. It's establishing the first act of the Bria is Ratzon. How was that Ratzon expressed? Time and R. Here we have R and time. Now there's something astonishing. If you look in, my husband pointed this out to me, the Gemara in Shabbos, which is where you find the whole Mai Hanukkah. Why do we celebrate? What is the reason for Hanukkah? Listen very carefully to the Lashon of the Nes, and you tell me where the Nes took place. And it's not what we normally think, by the way. Okay? And Rav Yosef Karo, points to this aspect of it. He says like this. So what happened? They came to the Beis Hamikdash. Lo matzu ela pach echad. Tell me what that means. They only found one pach. Okay, pach echad. Let's talk about what's mentioned. Pach echad. Shel shemen. We have a pach and it has shemen in it. Shel hayah moneach b'chosmo shel kohen gadol. And it still had the seal of the kohen gadol. V'lo hayu lo hayah bo ela lahadlik yom echad. What does that mean? What only had in it for enough for one day? That pach. The pach. Had in it lohaya bo. There was not in it more than for one day. Naset bo nes. A nes was done with it. The pach. What was it? The hidliko mimenu. And they lit from it for 8 days. What is it saying the nes is here? The nes here, okay, is that the pach had oil only for a day. But after they poured it out and lit for the day, the pach had more oil in it. And it had more oil in it for 8 days. The nes is in the pach, according to the Gemara here. Okay, that's one reading. The nes is in the pach. It kept having oil in it for 8 days. No, because she started with oil. Because she started with oil that kept flowing. But this was an empty pach. It was a good question. This was an empty pach. But they poured it out, and it was empty. By her, the water, the oil kept flowing as long as she brought more pots to gather it. The oil kept flowing. But she started with oil that just kept flowing. This was an empty, after they poured out the oil, there was an empty pach. And the pach had, all of a sudden, had shemen in it. This is according to one opinion that this is a strong opinion, a very strong one. However, the question on this opinion is, are you saying this is a nes galoy? Yesh me'ayin nes? You're saying this is yesh me'ayin. If you're saying that's the nes, it's yesh me'ayin. And the answer here is yes, that's what they're trying to say. They're trying to say that at this point in history, a yesh me'ayin type of nes took place. Because the battle was on that concept, as does Hashem have a ratzon, and that ratzon means that he started the world, time, energy, ash, fire, the whatever became the world as we know it, all the original primary forces that became the world. Yes, Hashem has a ratzon, and that ratzon means that human beings have a ratzon to manage all their various forces. And by the way, Rav Hirsch says, when Moshe said to Klal Yisrael, they're going to ask me your name, what should I say it is? What did Hashem answer? Eke Asher Eka. There, if you have a Rav Hirsch Chumash, beautiful essay, he establishes that what Hashem was telling him was, tell Klal Yisrael that my name is Eke Asher Eka, I will be that I want to be. That is the principle that Hashem has ratzon and does what he wants to do, and guides the world according to his ratzon. There is a ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's in play here. There is a purpose, and therefore we establish it in our lives. We also have a purpose. Then we try to use all our energies towards that purpose. That's the whole argument here. You take away ratzon Hashem, you essentially take away that people have free choice. Today, if you go into sociology and into, thinking about human beings, people... There is a tremendous argument. Many, 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 many people line up on the side that man does not really have free choice. Man is a predictable animal. Man is governed by instinct. Man does not have the ability to control himself. It's a very strong position till this day. And Klal Yisrael stand opposed to that, that this isn't the case. There is a ratzon. And that ratzon, if Hashem is ultimately the ratzon to do something, chadash nu, a chidush, we too have a ratzon, and we can impose upon ourselves a choice to do something new. We are not just victims of habit. We don't just act today because that's how we acted yesterday. At any point, this is where tshuva comes in. At any point in a person's life, they can do something brand new that is not the result of a previous impulse. That is not the result of a habit they already formed. That is not the result of the place they were at yesterday. But it's a new place that they're establishing for themselves right now. And from this point on, they go that way and not just repeat patterns that they're used to. They change course. Chidush, the concept of chidush, something new, is linked to the concept of ratzon, will. By the way, this is a secret to Yaakov and Esav, okay? Yaakov and Esav, Rome eventually comes from Esav. Remember it says they were in the belly? And every time Yaakov passed the base of Medrash, he was running at a ratzon. And it says, well, we was back in an old shir. And it says by Esav, he was ratz umefarches. One, but human beings have a sense of, we feel a will. One person's will is a will, but it keeps them running in the same place. A will to just feed their instincts. A will to just address the forces that are governing them. A will to satisfy the urges. So that's mefarches, running in place, going nowhere. But Yaakov is ruts. He's running to a destination because he has a will that he can direct in a certain way. It's not just a will to satisfy the impulse of the moment. It's a greater will that has as its basis knowledge of Hashem's purpose. And then he's able to will his body and his life and his energies in that direction. That's called doing things l'shem shamayim, as opposed to doing things for l'shem, to make ourselves a name. If we know Hashem is a ratzon, and therefore he brought this world into existence, and gave us the opportunity to be the vehicles to express his ratzon, then that becomes we devote our energies to, and when we succeed, we celebrate that. We celebrate that, and we are so gratified that Hashem is known in this world through us, and that's what Al Hanisim talks about. And when we see a nes that confirms that Hashem has a ratzon, you know what we do? We take our ratzon, and we come up with a... this is a multi-level plan, how they're going to get back into the base of Megiddo, how they're going to purify it, how much work went into that, how many people were going to committees and blood, et cetera, and work, and cleanse it, and purify it, and restore it, and rebuild it, and gather money, and build the, rebuild the, you know, the Eva, they build the Kalim, and everything that's been impure, defiled and set up a yuntiv and have everyone in Klal Yisrael participate in that yuntiv forever, and all the halachas of the yuntiv and the minhagim of the yuntiv and all of that. It's a lot of effort. That's where we take our ratzon and we devote it l'shimcha hagadol, for your great name. But make no mistake about it, this yuntiv is the yuntiv of establishing that in this time period, in other words, from that point on, and it was very current, it's a very modern issue. Is this world governed by, is the ultimate force, the strongest force of all forces, in the end, human and godly will and purpose? Or is that force dying, getting weaker, unable to establish itself against what seems to be forces that have a life of their own, that are an end in and of themselves, that cannot be directed, that cannot be managed? They are what they are. They're predictable. They're compulsive. They govern people. They're why people, you know, and that's how it is. And by the way, last point, the Zaydim are the people that were so well versed in Torah, but their argument was really, in a way to indulge themselves, an argument was against this. They were the Misyavnim at that time. They argued against Hashem having a Ratzon. They argued with all the Torah to, you know, against this idea, and this was defeated. I just want to announce Lekavod Chanukah, fine pearls. I need some fine pearls. Chanukah open house. Here, everybody take this. This is, here she is. Anita Corin. She has beautiful pearls from the Far East. Very reasonable, very, very reasonable. She has an address in Hewlett. If anybody wants to buy pearls for Hanukkah, come see it. Yes. Yeah? That's so cool. Have a wonderful Hanukkah, everybody. We, Amir Tz Hashem, will be here next week on Hanukkah, okay?